there's so many things that go on in football. Like there's lights and there's judgments, there's everything's in split seconds, all this type of stuff. And yeah, ran into someone and I got cleaned up and knocked out and had like a seizure on the footy field. And yeah, it was pretty big when you look back on it. But at the time, I didn't really know what was going on. I was unconscious for a while. And just remember, I woke up half an hour later in the change rooms, had no idea what had happened. Memory went blank, everything. So yeah, it's crazy. From one top of the world to legit rock bottom in a split second.
Whether it's the clothes you wear to work or a metaphor for putting up a front, we all wear a uniform. But often there's a lot going on behind the uniform, and many of us are reluctant to express how we are really feeling.
Each week on Behind the Uniform, Dr. Izzy Smith and Captain Hugo Tovey will be joined by a special guest as they talk openly and honestly about their experiences with mental health. Nothing will be off limits, so prepare yourself for tears, laughter and goosebumps.
Welcome, everybody, to Season 2, Episode 7 of Behind the Uniform. Izzy, it's always good to see your smiling face. How are you today?
I am good. Nice to see you, and that facial hair is progressing amazingly, Hugo. I'm sure Amber is loving it.
very seedy this month. I've kind of gone the stone cold Steve Austin sort of European goatee look. So anyway, I'm liking it. It's growing on me, but Amber definitely isn't liking it. How's your week of annual leave been, Izzy?
It's been good. It's been so, so busy, in honesty. I feel like we might need a holiday from the holiday, but it's been so good to see my family. And I also volunteered with the Pucker Up ride that we talked about with Wayne in one of the previous episodes. So I volunteered as medical support, but I also did the whole ride, and I'd never ridden more than 100 kilometers in a day before. And then I did that more than 3 days in a row.
331.8 kilometers for the 3,318 Australians who lost their life by suicide in 2019, yeah. I believe. And the ride's all about conversations along the ride and connecting with people, which is great.
Oh, it was incredible. And it reminded me so much of the event I was supposed to be doing, the Point to Pinnacle in Hobart that weekend, but I couldn't because of COVID. And I think it really highlights that, you know, in the mental health space, there's lots of different organizations, but they don't compete. You know, they recognize that they're doing different things with different strengths, and it's all about the same goal, and that's, you know, preventing suicide and, you know, improving people's mental health. So no, that was great. But yeah, excited about the episode today and the chat we had with Dan. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Dan's story and about the episode?
Yeah, so look, today's episode, we're very privileged to actually sit down with Dan Venables. He's a 22-year-old ex-AFL football player. He won a premiership flag for the West Coast Eagles at such a young age. But what makes his story remarkable is that he's overcome several brain bleeds and concussion that's forced him into an early retirement, and the subsequent sort of mental illness and mental health ramifications from that. And it was one of the first times he's actually shared his story in this much detail. And he has previously kept it really hidden and hasn't really spoken about it. So it was, I felt quite privileged that he shared it on our platform. And there were a lot of key takeaways, though, from his from our chat.
Yeah, Hugo, when you told me about Dan, I really, really wanted to get him on the podcast, because I think, and this is something we've talked a bit about, as a society, we're raising awareness about mental health, but it's still very much discussing the palatable mental health. And like I said, that, you know, we need to recognize that mental health is much more than just depression and anxiety, and things like chronic pain and disability, they can also impact mental health. And I think Dan's story is such a great example of that, and how as a society, we need to do more and make people feel better, you know, being who they are.
Yeah, absolutely, Izzy. And you even said in the episode that you couldn't believe that Dan is only 22, because what he has learnt and what he has been forced to learn at such a young age is pretty incredible. And I think some of the words of wisdom and the knowledge that he shared with us is something that I think everyone listening today can get something out of, because I know I personally learned so much from Dan. We really loved that chat, and I've got no doubt that you're going to enjoy the episode today. So look, thank you everyone for your support with this podcast. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and let's get stuck in. Dan Venables, welcome to Behind the Uniform.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Really looking forward to our chat today, Dan. It's I have heard of your story, obviously leading up to this, and you know, watched you win that flag for the West Coast Eagles. And my brother actually is a massive West Coast Eagles fan, but don't hold it against me. I'm a big Adelaide Crows fan, but I promise, Izzy, we won't just talk about footy this podcast.
Yeah, I'm like, what year did West Coast Eagles win? I think I can remember like Julie Bishop putting it on her Instagram. That's me. I know the politics, and that's how I know West Coast Eagles won.
2018, Collingwood, boundary, up in the last quarter. Bloody ripper. Anyway, told you, we won't just talk about footy. But no, Dan, thanks so much, mate. And we might as well get stuck into it. And the first question we want to ask you, which we asked all our guests, is what is Dan Venables doing when you are at your happiest?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I'm just free-spirited, to be honest with you. I don't really, I don't know, you just get into a flow state, I guess, and you're just not really thinking about much. I don't know, I'm a very family-orientated person and I just love being around people. And it's a good question, to be honest with you. I don't really like, you don't really know until you get asked that, actually.
Yeah, we like putting you on the spot, mate.
Early. Yeah, no, that's, yeah.
But you're a family man?
Yeah, yep. I've grown up the youngest of four kids. I'm a massive family man. It's been a big part of my life. Moving away from a young age and that, you know, you really find, I guess, how important that is to you, having your family and the values that you get taught from them when you're younger. And now my sister and my brother, they have their own kids themselves. And yeah, it's pretty cool. I really do value that.
I think that's something that so many people have learned in the last 18 months as well, as because we can't see our families, how much we value them. And it's funny, actually, yesterday I was talking with my partner about what our perfect day would be. And mine was, say, kind of what we'd done today, but, you know, seeing my family and my little nieces and nephews. Because I think of what you said, what makes you happy is just when you're being yourself. And I think that's being present, you know, when you're not on your phone, not doing anything else, just being present. And yeah, I'm sure lots of people are missing their families a lot that are listening to this podcast.
Mm. And mate, you mentioned you're youngest of four. Growing up, sort of, did you always have that dream to play AFL footy? Did any of your brothers play AFL footy? And I guess, you know, you went pretty high up in the draft picks. You must have been a bit of a gun growing up. But what was that like, I guess, growing up, loving footy and then getting picked up, pick 13 as a young kid?
Yeah, so my mum's grandpa actually captain coached North Melbourne, and then my grandpa played for North Melbourne. My dad was at Collingwood, never played senior footy there, but so I just grew up with all my family playing football. And as a young kid, you know, mum couldn't get me out of my North Melbourne uniform, running around kicking footies everywhere. My mum reckons I was two when I was kicking footies. So I just loved it, you know, and it's, yeah, I was pretty good as a youngster playing footy, you know, in Melbourne. And I was lucky enough, I got an education out of footy as well, got a scholarship to Penleyness and Grammar School. So footy's taken me through school. Then footy took me to WA, you know, never been to Perth in my life. And then, yeah, I was drafted at pick 13 and a week later I was off to Perth. So footy's been massive in my life. And my brother never played footy. He was more into the computer games and all that type of stuff. So it was just early memories, just me, my old man kicking the footy. I was only allowed to go for a kick with him if he said I had to kick on my left foot. So I used to hate that. So, but now I was glad that he made me do that, because it helped me out a lot. Doing that, things like that, you know, and it's not times like now where I reflect on that and it's like little things like that help me, you know.
Well, it teaches you so many values. I was a gymnast, and it teaches you that you're going through something shit, it's really hard, but it will pay off in the long run. I think that's the best metaphor for life. And sport's so good for young people and so good for young people's mental health. And, you know, that's really in line with November and what we do and some of the fundraising and kind of initiatives.
Yeah, it's for sure. It's interesting, mate. I suppose moving to Perth will be tough too, because you know, Victoria, Melbourne, Perth is, you know, the other side of Australia.
May as well be another country.
Well, especially bloody during COVID, right? They don't want us over there, mate. But it must have been tough to move to like a completely new state, and then you're a young kid and going into a very, you know, blokey environment with people you don't know. Was that challenging?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I finished school in November 2016. A week later, I turned 18. And then a week after that, I was on a plane to Perth. And I'd never been to Perth before, as I said. So it was very, it's very daunting, to be honest. It's a long way from Melbourne, that's for sure. So, yeah, I feel like this whole thing you learn along the way, just about, like, I was thrown into the deep end as a youngster, and you just learn to go with it, I think. And that's the best thing I learned. I just went with it. And no, it's obviously hard. You miss your family, you miss your friends, you miss everything. You know, it's not easy at all. But, yeah, I've learned so much about myself through this time, just being by doing that move, you know, and having to do things yourself, and you grow up very quickly as a kid. And as you said before, you don't appreciate the things that you learn when you're going through the tough times like that, you know, because it's definitely not easy. But now I look back and I'm so grateful that I moved out as an 18-year-old, as a kid, and I've learned all these lessons and all that. So yeah, it's cool when you look back and reflect on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it went pretty well for you. You won a grand final when you were how old?
Yeah, I was 19. I was 19 when we won the flag, which was pretty cool.
I was going to nightclubs till I was like 5 a.m. when I was 19, not doing anything amazing like that. God.
Well, you know, to put it in perspective for people listening who might not be, AFL fans like myself, or, you know, more like Izzy, who aren't necessarily, all over AFL, they... winning a flag in general is tough. You know, you get people that play their whole careers never winning a flag. So winning ineffectively your first full season, I know you had a few injury niggles, but then winning a flag, because, you know, I do want to start with a bit more uplifting moment, but describe that feeling of lifting that Premiership Cup, almost reaching the pinnacle of success for what people strive towards in their AFL careers. And you've achieved it at such a young age, so early on in your career. Did you truly comprehend what that was like? And describe that for us.
It's crazy, to be honest with you. I was, as you said, people play their whole careers and they don't get one. And I was pretty fortunate enough in pretty much my first year. And I feel like because you're so young, you just go with it. Like you don't haven't really like I hadn't been at the club when they weren't winning and all that type of stuff. So I was pretty lucky in that sense. But it was just a phenomenal time, you know. And you look back now and you're like, where I'm lucky I got that, because that ties me to the club for life. And it's not just like winning the flag on the day. It's like it's the reunions in the future. It's the history. You're a part of the club. You're on the wall. You're on photos forever. You know what I mean? Like
behind you, mate. Is that the grand final?
I'm at my mate's Tommy Cole's house. living with him at the minute. So this is his grand final room.
For people that aren't listening, there's a big photo behind Dan of. I can't see it too well.
It's the national anthem in front of the MCG, 100,000, yeah. Jeez, all the boys lined up. It's pretty cool.
That's bloody good. My brother was there. A memorable moment for any Eagles tragic. But so, Dan, you've reached that pinnacle of success as far as an AFL career at such a young age. But for you, it would have just been the start, really. You would have thought, this is the start. Like, where's my career going to go? I might be a 200-game player. I might win bloody three flags. Like, you know, you're on the cusp of breaking into the midfield and being a regular player for the Eagles. So let's just now sort of skip through to the following year. You know, you're 19, so you've just won the flag. You've had the sort of the off season. You're going into a new season as a Premiership player, but things change pretty quickly in life, right? And I think that's something I can really relate to. What happened, mate, if you just kind of how much you remember of it, but it was sort of going forward a little bit to round 9 of the 2019 AFL season, 17th of May, and your life changed in an instant.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You know, I was at the top of the world in 2018 after winning the flag, and 6 months later, I had a traumatic brain injury on the footy field, just in a marking contest. There's so many things that go on in football. Like there's lights and there's judgments, there's everything's in split seconds, all this type of stuff. And yeah, ran into someone and I got cleaned up and knocked out and had like a seizure on the footy field. And yeah, it was pretty big when you look back on it. But at the time, I didn't really know what was going on. I was unconscious for a while. And just remember, I woke up half an hour later in the change rooms, had no idea what had happened. Memory went blank, everything. So yeah, it's crazy. From one top of the world to legit rock bottom in a split second.
And Dan, my understanding is you had quite a severe traumatic brain injury with bleeds in the brain. It's hard, you know, concussions are so common in footy. So it wouldn't have been clear, was this a severe concussion or not? But tell us, you went to hospital and had imaging done. Can you tell us those first kind of days to weeks after the injury?
I woke up in the change rooms like half an hour later and I come good. I thought I was all right. You know, I'd had a concussion before and you always have a headache and that. But I felt all right. I was walking around, no dramas, communicating. And then I went home and slept. And my head was just absolutely thumping. I felt like my head was going to explode. And then I finally woke up the next morning and went to the club. And from there, I went and got scans. I just went to hospital on scans because I was vomiting everything. It wasn't good. And then as I was getting scans, they come out and told me that I needed to stay and get more scans and all that. And I thought, well, something must be up here. I just remember the doctor called me and he just said, mate, you've had seven brain bleeds You need to go home and just sit on the couch and don't do anything.
If you could put that in perspective, either Izzy or Dan, just because I must admit, I don't actually know much about how the brain and everything works, but 7 brain bleeds, like what sort of relating that to sort of your, when I say your standard concussion, but a normal state of head knock compared to say what you had with 7 brain bleeds?
So normally with a concussion, you don't have any changes on imaging. You know, it's a clinical diagnosis based on people's symptoms. I used to work as a footy doctor and the assessment was from, you know, testing people at the sidelines. Whereas a bleed in the brain, that's an intracerebral hemorrhage. And depending on the size of it, it can be fatal if, you know, your brain is an enclosed space. So if you bleed, there's only so much room that blood can go until you need to have surgery. And, you know, it's obviously... quite, if you think about it, concussion can be so severe without any damage on imaging. If we're seeing 7 bleeds in a brain, we know that's going to be significant. And all those symptoms of the vomiting and that you were out for such a long time make you think it's going to be pretty severe. So Dan, like in those few days, did you really understand what was happening and what the potential impact this was going to have?
No idea. I just sort of just come good. Which has probably been the hardest bit, you know, every single day. It was just getting worse and worse and worse. And I was just like, I don't know, I've got no idea what is going on here. Like, this has never happened before. And because, like, they're so kind of, not many people have had these in footy and all that type of stuff. So they didn't really have anything to go off at all. So then it's just like you live day to day not knowing if, like, you're going to just come good. Because it's not like you break your leg, they're like, all right, mate, you're in a cast for 2 months and you can start walking and you come good. They just did it not know one bit, and I just kept getting worse and worse, and things started to accumulate.
Dan, when you say worse and worse, can you tell us things like, how was your thinking and how was your mood in that time?
Shocking. Like, I was just like, I just couldn't think. My head was thumping every single day, couldn't sleep, migraines, headaches. Then, like, when you don't move and all that, your body just becomes like stuck. Like,
when you're moving all the time and really fit, when you have you know, resting in bed, it's the worst for it. And Dan, you said the uncertainty was the worst, which I think so many people can identify with. If we know there's an end in sight, that's bearable. We can feel in control. But at that point, you just have no control over the situation. And I guess to cut to the chase, unfortunately, things didn't really get better, did they? Can you tell us a bit about the... you know, what it's led to with your AFL career?
It's been 2.5 years onwards and I still am struggling with my symptoms day-to-day life. You know, it's become pretty hard. And ultimately, I've been forced into retirement of AFL football, which, yeah, as we spoke about before, footy was like my thing I've been doing since I was 2, you know, and which is sad. And yeah, so my career's cut short at the age of, well, really at the age of 20 when it happened. But yeah, I'm 22 now and I'm left with symptoms that just won't go away. And the best thing for me is just to not play footy again and to just try and focus on my health and get myself better. And, you know, the way I speak about it kind of like it's not much, but it's because I'm pretty numb to it all, you know, and I'm pretty just like, this is life for me now. So I'm able to just say it how it is and all that type of stuff. No real emotion about it, but it sucks. It really does, you know. When you really think about it, you know, it's my... as I said, like the sport I played as a kid, when I'm playing footy, I'm happy. You know, it was my career, it was my job, so many things, and it just got taken away in an instant.
I can feel your emotions there, Dan, and I can tell it's so difficult. But I think when people listen to, say, a footy player, they probably don't realise it's more so much more than just footy. Like you said, it was your life, it was your career, it was your profession, it's your job, it's your hobby.
It's your community as well.
It's your community. It's so many things than just kicking the ball around each week and that's it. Like, it's your family. You move to Perth with your family, your community, and, you know, you're only 22. You know, most people retire at the back end of a career, sort of maybe early 30s. So I can see how that's so challenging. But why did you decide to really want to tell your story? And why? I know you kind of for a while kept it not necessarily hidden, but you're sort of more closed, probably just wanting to just really focus on your rehab and yourself. But what is it about sharing your story and say this platform and this podcast that you really want to achieve?
Yeah. So as you said, I didn't speak out to the media for over 2 years, just because it was a mess, to be honest with you. But then I really just thought, you know what, if I'm like this, there's other people out there struggling, you know, and every time you speak to someone, you get a bit of inspiration, you know, you get yourself out of bed, you get yourself going for a walk. By me speaking out, I guess I got a little bit of a platform behind me just from AFL and all of that. I really want to help other people who are struggling as well. You know, I feel like my story can relate to anyone, whether they're failed exam at school, they've lost their job, they have a tough day at work, tough day at home, they've got an injury, mental health illness, anything. I feel like my story can actually relate to anyone just through the fact that, as we spoke about before, you know, it was my past, my hobby to play footy, ended up being my job. It was my passion. It was everything, you know what I mean? My community, all this stuff. I feel like my story can really relate to a lot of people. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are in a worse position than me, and I'm the first to admit that. And I look at them, and that's where as I spoke to you before, Hugo, you know, I was like, mate, I'm inspired by your story. And, you know, there's people out there that hopefully they can take something from me, and they can, you know, get a little pick-me-up and a little bit of a, you know, like, all right, well, let's do this. Let's not poor me, why me? Let's make this into a positive and just get forward in life.
I love that, Dan. I really do. And, you know, one thing I love saying is, you know, making the best of a bad situation. And for me to relate to that, I can really relate to some of what you're saying. When, you know, I did play that whole sort of victim, why me card for a while. And then I realized that, you know, the whole cliche, if your story can help one person, it kind of makes it worthwhile. And then if you can help one more person, and if you can help another person, you kind of get a bit of strength yourself from that. And then I don't know about you, but there's nothing more rewarding than when you have someone saying, you know, mate, thanks for sharing your story. It's really helped me get through a bad time in my life. I don't know if you've received those types of messages, mate, but it's pretty bloody rewarding.
Yeah, for sure, man. When the first interview I did, I received so many things, and I was just really like taken back by it. I didn't think I would have got my message across, you know. But I think you also got to remember, you know, if you're feeling poor me, why me, mate? I do that all the time. Like, it's fine to think like that, you know what I mean? But it's just when you get stuck into that. Like, there's times when you wake up and you're struggling, you're like, why is this happening to me? And that's fine. But it's breaking that mindset, you know.
I'm so inspired by you right now, and you're only like 22 and you're demonstrating really like impressive self-awareness of, you know, you're acknowledging how you're feeling and that's okay, but how you can move forward from it. And sorry, I've just realized I've interrupted. I feel terrible now. But I just want to ask you, you said in these 2-3 years, at times you're really shit, which is completely understandable. The closest for me to identify is, you know, I've been doing medicine, pretty much started studying hard since I was like 15. And if I had to get that taken away from me in a second, like my whole identity really is medicine. And I can't even comprehend what it would be like to have that taken from me. In those 2-3 years when you were feeling shit and you were understandably feeling like, poor me, this is fucked, how did you get through that? How did you not relive every moment and just feel really bloody angry at the world?
Oh, I did. I'd be in so much pain. I still am in every day, you know, I'm in pain every day. I'd be in so much pain, I'd sit under a hot shower and just cry, you know, and I'd be like, why is this happening to me? But then, I don't know, your body is an amazing, powerful tool. Your body is, you know, and you're just able to get yourself through it, you know. And I was pretty open and honest with people from the start about how I was going. I never hid anything. I did hide like how I was feeling every day, you know, and all that type of stuff, just because it's just natural.
This podcast is called Behind the Uniform, and it's kind of that metaphor for often we can get very good at putting that uniform on or that mask on. You know, for a footy player, I can imagine when you put your bloody jumper on, you get that sense of kind of that, you know, identity almost, and you kind of almost have something to hide behind. I'd be interested to know, when you're going through those really difficult days through your recovery and rehab, when you rocked up to the footy club, did you kind of put on that uniform, put on that mask a little bit and really, you know, open up to all the lads, or did you feel like, no, I'm not really in the mindset to do so?
Yes and no. I used to rock up to the footy club, and because I'd be in so much pain and wouldn't sleep and all this stuff, I'd be honestly an absolute mess. But when I'd walk into the doors of the footy club, it was a bit like, this is my getaway, you know. I can just try and interact with people. I can go do some exercise, all this stuff, and I'd make me forget about what I was going through.
It's probably because, you know, the team, you know, like you said, it's like your family. And we watched a video before the podcast, mate, of when you actually told your teammates. What was that like? You know, I loved it, by the way. I thought it was an extremely well-spoken, you know, mixed it with a bit of humor in there, which I loved. But you just saw that raw emotion in you and your teammates. What was that like, actually standing in front of your teammates and telling them to kind of say, boys, I just found out today, even though you probably knew it may have been coming, what was it actually like saying it out loud to your teammates?
That speech actually went for It was like a 6 minute speech. They just cut it into a little snippet. So I've got an actual footage of the whole thing, you know, and it was pretty emotional. It was hard because they're like my best mates, you know, they're the people that, like, when I'm away from my family, like, I'd come to the club and this would be my home. You know what I mean? And I've met so many amazing people there. They're giving me an opportunity. It's like being at school, to be honest with you. Like, you go in every day and, like, you muck around with these guys and all that, and I'm just going to miss the whole thing, you know? And they've seen a few of the things that I've gone through, and I've got my best mates in there as well. And that was just my whole, like, all right, boys, I'm out. Like, it sucked, man. It was really hard. And I'd rather speak in front of 10,000 people who I don't know than speak in front of 40 of the boys that I hang with every day. That was hard. It was hard for sure.
Daniel, like, why do you think it was so hard to say it to 40 close mates rather than 10,000 strangers?
Just because I have so much connection with them, and the whole fact that, like, you know, like, this is all over. It's hard, mate. Everyone I've spoken to about it when they do their retirement speech, it's all the same. It's like you get up there and you're just like, wow, like, this is actually it, you know, and you're pretty vulnerable in front of the whole group, you know, like, you really let yourself out. And I was close to breaking down crying a few times, and you really just open up, you know, and it's a powerful thing, and it's something that you can only do in front of people you trust. And when your mates are there for you and they understand what's going on, and a few of them had tears, and it was a pretty powerful experience, to be honest with you, and something I'll never forget, you know. And I'm glad that they videoed it as well. I can always look back on that. And
nothing's better than a good cry sometimes as well.
Oh, for sure, mate, 100%.
When patients say to me they apologize for crying, I'm like, there is no such thing as a bad cry. It is always a good cry. But Dan, it sounds like you really did feel comfortable being vulnerable and yourself around these guys. And do you think you learned that from your family upbringing, that it was okay to be vulnerable around people, or was it the footy club? Because, you know, there's some very, you know, old school cultures about footy clubs and macho and men, which, from my experience working in footy, I think cultures are really changing. Do you think that's true of, you know, men feeling more comfortable to be vulnerable in that space?
Yeah, I think it's for sure. You know, the day I walked into West Coast, you know, it was a really open place. Like, you know, how you, as you said, like, back in the day, like, it was a real man place. I never experienced that once.
That's great.
I think the reason, like, I'm able to speak about this and be so open and vulnerable is I've been to hell and back, and I don't care about being vulnerable anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen this, I can see through it.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, like, mate, like, what's wrong with it? Like, are you gonna judge me if you do that? I don't care, because all I care about is myself and how I feel. But yeah, the people that are mate close with you, they're gonna be with you, they're not against you. So if they're your mates, then no dramas.
That's bloody powerful to hear, Sal. And you know what? You've learned that, and you're doing that at 22. Far out. I'd hate to think what I was like when I was 22. I'm still bloody learning to deal with my emotions and express those in a, you know, in a vulnerable way. And you're doing that at 22. I think that people listening to that right now, like, there is a key amazing lesson that people can learn from that. And you know what? The people that do judge you for it, who gives a shit, right? They're not your true friends and family anyway.
I was just going to say, people judging is actually a projection of their own issues. When we're nasty about other people, it's usually stuff of how we feel about ourselves, but we aren't self-aware to acknowledge. So that's, you know, what it is. I think the biggest lesson I've learned from working as a doctor and having people yell and scream at me is this is them projecting their shit, not, you know, me. And I think that goes for vulnerability and mental health as well.
No, you're a brave man, because I always loved this quote from Gus Wallen, who was a guest last season, but he says, being open, honest and vulnerable is one of the bravest things you can do. And I think you bloody hit that nail on its head. And you're the perfect man for it. But I want to ask you a question, Dan. Now, we spoke about your retirement. Now, you're forced into retirement effectively, because how that's working for people playing along at home, there was my understanding that basically a panel of three independent neurologists who, you know, assess your case and go, look, unfortunately, for a range of different reasons, Dan Venables is not fit to play contact sport, AFL, and hence you have to be medically retired. But that decision was effectively made for you. You didn't really have a choice. If they kind of turned around to you, and they probably did this back in the day with footy, and they said, Dan, mate, it's completely up to you. How are you feeling? You're welcome to crack into preseason next year and give it a crack. You know, we're going to give you the full, you know, as much as you want to play footy again. If it was left up to you, what do you think your decision would have been?
Yeah, it was left up to me for 2 years before that. That's why I kept kept hanging around because I want to play and I wanted to play. I would have kept going until I was told to stop. Yeah. Mm. So the AFL employed this this panel, and the AFL told me I can never play again. So they took the decision out of my hands, which I think is a brave thing by them to do, to be honest with you. And I'm happy that they did that, because like I would just wouldn't have stopped, you know. As much as it was, my symptoms are so bad every day, you know. I just kept had that fight in me to just keep going, you know. And like there was times where I definitely gave up, you know. Like this hasn't been easy, you know. Like life is not easy at all, and like it's not all roses, you know what I mean. Like there's always times we have your ups and downs, and there were times I gave up, you know. But I just had this fire in me that just kept going and going and going and going. And but yeah, I'm glad that they made the decision for me. You know, I just made it easier within myself as well.
Well, and it sounds like, mate, you've given it everything you could have over those last 2 and a bit years. Look, it's an interesting one, mate, and it's obviously it's not easy. But do you look too far ahead now into the future? Do you kind of look sort of long-term, what life looks like? You're only 22. You've had so much going on, more than most people experience in a lifetime. Do you kind of look too far in the future and go, you know, what's my life going to look like outside of footy?
Yeah, I do a bit, to be honest with you. Like, I won't be able to get a job for a while. I won't be able to work for a bit. And I hope I will be able to work one day, but there's times where like you just sit there when you're stuck in a migraine and you think, is this going to be me for the rest of my life, you know? And there are a lot of unknowns. You know, it's been over 2.5 years now and I'm still not symptom free and I struggle most days. So I just pray to God and hope to God that I come good. But yeah, for sure, I definitely think about the future and what that's going to look like, you know. And that's why I want to help the rehab that I've been doing. You know, people aren't doing that, and that's why I want to help get the rehab of concussion and traumatic brain injuries out there. You got to train your brain and keep doing all them things. You know, there's not just, you can't just sit there and just wait time anymore and take tablets and all that type of stuff. You know, that's what, I'm wanting to do is to get people to find new ways to help people struggling with brain injuries and all that type of stuff. But it's hard. I don't really want to look too much in the future, to be honest with you, because it can bring you down, to be honest. But I just try and keep every day, each day at a time, and see how I go.
And that's a wise, Daniel, because, you know, there's no point worrying about things out of our control or that far in the future. I know I can do that, and I work myself up into such a tether, and it's just wasted worry. But just, Dan, I want to talk about some of your symptoms, because from the outside, you look like a healthy, fit, 20-something year old guy, and there is so many people living with, you know, invisible illnesses, and essentially you have a disability now. And I think we need to talk more about that as a society, because, you know, if someone has a, like you say, a hamstring injury, your work's not going to mind you having to, I don't know, make some modifications or stuff like that, and we see their injury and we trust them and we respect them. But there's so many people living in pain that just have to justify that their symptoms are real and how they're feeling. Like, do you have any views on that, or have you experienced people not really appreciating what you're going through?
Yeah, well, 100%. You know, it's no one can see like what you're actually going through with inside. You know, I have pain in my neck every day. I have pain in my jaw every day. I have headaches. I have the way I feel in my head is just not right. I have cognitive function issues. I have heaps of stuff. There's so many things that honestly that I just forget about. And there's like, you know what I mean? Like there's so many things going on at once that it's just like, it's pretty bad. But even like sleep, like I wake up and I'm just so fatigued because I can't sleep, and then things compound and it just adds up. And you know, that's probably the hardest thing to deal with. You know, as we said, you got no scars or you got no cast or limp or, you know what I mean? It's just something that you just are feeling yourself. And I present well, I do. I present really well, you know. I'm fit. I can run. I can move. You know what I mean. Like it's all good, but it's just the pain and all that I have inside me, and then which is hard, you know. And that's where you just have to be open and honest with people and tell them how it is. And yeah, it is hard. And I feel like that's why I want to speak out, because I know there's so many people that are struggling and people can't see it. But yeah, the more people that can speak out, the more people that can open up and share their experiences, you know. It'll help them people that are suffering as well, you know, speak out, and the people around them, they'll educate them. They'll get education about it. And that's really what it's about. It's about the education of the people that are, it's not just the person going through it. It's the people around them. That's the main thing, because you feel like you're the only one going through it at the time. You know, you might be at home and you're struggling and someone wants you to go somewhere and they don't understand why you can't, you know? So yeah.
Dan, talking about the impact on other people, has it impacted your relationships, friendships, romantic relationships?
for people not understanding how what you're going through?
Well, I'm sure there's times where, like, people that don't really realize what I'm going through, they don't understand, you know. But no, it's been pretty good. My partner at the time, she was with me the whole way through for a long time there while I was suffering, and she was really good. My parents were good. Some of my friends really knew what was going on, which was good. And had a couple of people at the club that were there, and they understood, and they were able to share and educate people as well at the same time. So yeah, I don't know. It's a hard question, and it's been so long that, to be honest, I've just, if they're really my mates, they'd know what I'm going through, and they'd ask me and all that type of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how I see it.
And Dan, let's say there's someone listening who has a family member with an invisible illness, like chronic pain or migraines. Would you have any advice for that person who's supporting someone with those symptoms that they're battling every day, but, you know, like you, look healthy and fit, and maybe at times put on a brave front?
Like, I was living by myself for a while, you know. Some of my mates would come over and they'd cook me food, or they'd say, come over for dinner, I'll help you out there, you know, things like that.
I love that. Sometimes, like you said, it can be the little things, right?
The little things that make things easier, you know. Like I moved house a month and a half after I got my injury, and I did it all by myself, and I was just like, wow. Then one of my mates come and helped me because he's seen what I was doing, and it made it so much easier, things like that, where it's like, far out. I don't know how I was going to do that by myself. But, like, just people being around there for you, you know, they don't have to get in your personal space, but they can just be around there as a floating hand. That's kind of what I did, yeah. It's hard to explain because, like, at the time, you don't really know, you know what I mean?
When I would spend a big chunk of time in hospital, and, you know, even just a mate messaging me, it wouldn't even necessarily be about how you're going. It could be about bloody the Crows on the weekend, or it could be about a new TV show to watch, but just that connection and just feeling like, you know, I'm still me, I'm still Hugo, you know, I'm sure you wanted to still be Dan. From where you were at the worst of it, like, I'm talking the crying in the shower, you talk about the darkest days you keep talking about, you know, it sounds like a truly horrendous place to be in. From where you are now, you know, doing a podcast like this, being active in the community, sharing your story a bit more. Yes, absolutely, you've still got symptoms. I get that. But do you often look back at the Dan Venables who was in the darkest of dark days and think, you know what, I've still come a long way, and I'm proud of that?
Yeah, for sure, 100%. You know, when I look back at the worst of the worst, I've come a long way, you know. And it's not until now I realise how bad I was. And, you know, at the time, you don't really understand. And even now, I'm sure in 2 years' time, I'll be like, geez, I was in September 2021, I was extremely bad compared to how I was now. You know, it's just, I always look back and see how far I've come. And that's how you have to be, you know, little steps, you know, might go two steps forward, one step back. But as long as you recognize that, you know, and I keep a little journal as well, how I've been tracking and all that type of stuff.
I love it. Written journal, mate, or on your phone?
Nah, I write and I had to train, like, all that stuff, all writing and reading and all that helps my recovery as well, you know. And I've learned how to do all that stuff, and I know I've changed so much since this all happened, you know. I'm so proud of the way that, how far I've come as well.
Well, you should be, mate. You should be very proud. And even you coming on and sharing your story with two complete strangers like us, you know, we really appreciate it. And I'm sure people listening will really appreciate it and hearing your story. And it's funny, when we spoke at the very start offline and I opened up and shared my story, you said something along the lines of, you know, mate, for what you've been through, I feel kind of almost my story is not worthy of even being on a podcast like this. Well, I can tell you right now, mate, from listening to your story for the last 30 minutes or so, I can tell you that I almost flipped that and feel the opposite, that, like, I can't believe what you go through on a daily basis, what you have been through. You're truly inspiring. And it's funny, I hate when people call me inspiring. You're probably the same. I don't know. You probably don't like when people say you're inspiring, but I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, I truly think what you've overcome and what you continue to overcome is incredible, that you're just 22. And some of these lessons that I'm, you know, writing down and you're giving us is really amazing. So I think you really got to, take that on board, mate, and be proud of yourself for that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate that. And it is good. You know, I just hope that I can help other people out, you know, and I feel like in life, you know, you can give in or give it your all, you know, and I'm just going to try to give it my all and see how I go.
I love it, mate. That's beautiful, beautiful words. And I think it's really nice sort of way to finish on that. But before we do finish, Izzy and I always like to sort of start our podcast off with kind of what's Dan doing at his happiest. And we got that at the start. But then at the end, we like to, you know, use all the words of wisdom you've been given out this to the last 30 minutes or so. And there's a lot of take homes, but what is one mental health or sort of mental well-being challenge for us, as in Izzy and me, and then also our listeners playing along at home? So, you know, that could be anything. It could be something that works for you, but something that's sort of like a mental health challenge that you can set us, and then we'll go away and then we'll do it for the next week. So, you know, whether it's charge your phone next room, whether it's, you know, try 10 minutes of bloody meditation, whatever that might be, hit us.
Mate, honestly, I try and go for an hour walk every day.
I love that.
You look at your phone when you're walking?
I just do it, no phone, no nothing. Good. Just fresh good. Air. Fresh
I like
air.
That.
That's, I don't even listen to music. I just go listen, just be free, no phone, get away from that.
That's good, Dan.
And that ties into what you said at the start of when you're most happiest. And it's just by the sounds of it, it's when you're being present. And I think in, you know, 2021, we're just rarely present and in the moment, and that can be so grounding. So I'm glad you set that challenge too, because I have a very boisterous puppy that we need to be walking a lot.
But Izzy, we got to set ourselves this as well. And this is people listening. Go not just the hour walk, but leave your phone if you can at home, or don't just sit on your phone or, you know, taking your bloody Instagram photos of sunsets or bloody listening to...
Nothing wrong with doing that every now and then.
Well, hang on, Iz, but what if they're... Unless you're listening to this podcast, that's the one exception. No, I love that, Dan. I love it, mate. That's bloody good.
Yeah, Dan, thank you so much for coming on today. Your story's like bloody touching, what you've overcome and what you've accepted, and you've managed it with such grace. And I think everything is relative in life, but you've said that your story... people can identify with it. And I think that is just so true. There's so many people going through different types of adversity, and most people don't go through what you went through or what Hugo went through, but we can all learn lessons about resilience and values about life. And I think I've definitely had, you know, taken a lot from today. So just thank you so much, Dan. You're a pretty amazing guy.
No dramas. I appreciate that. And, you know, if I can leave one thing before I go, it's just the only thing you can control is legit the next thing that you do. That's don't worry about the future, don't worry about the past, just worry about what's actually next. So, you know, that's the only thing you can control, legit. And once you learn that, it makes things a lot easier, you know, and you have less worries. So thank you guys for having me. I really do appreciate that, and I'm very happy to share my story and to speak to you guys as well.
I love that, mate. Really fitting way to end. You're bloody wise beyond your years, but thanks again, Dan. we really do appreciate it, mate. And hopefully we can be in touch soon, and look forward to seeing what you get up to next.
Sure. Hopefully you'll be back on the right side of Australia before not too long. Catch up for a beer, all three of us, one time.
Cheers, Dan.
Thank you, guys.